black art. Sometimes you got to look back to look ahead. Right? Daryl Grant this morning at WBGO celebrating the 25th anniversary of a seminal recording for him and for a whole lot of folks. It garnered one of the top 10 records of the year when it came out in 1994 at the time. Wallace Roney, Christian McBride, and Brian Blade. As I said at the front, how do you top that?
Well, you can't, you know, you can't repeat yourself, as Betty Carter used to say. So you got to try and figure out a way to improve yourself. And so for me, finding out who the cats are now, some of the baddest cats playing this music, and politely asking them if they'd mind joining me on this record that was made when they were teenagers.
They are. Cats has been here before. He's been on the checkout and also the 2014 Thelonious Monk competition winner. Say good morning to Marquise Hill. Yeah. And from Chicago, I believe, a world-class bassist, the two of you have collaborated more than once. Please welcome Clark Summers to Morning Jazz. These guys are having too much fun. And on the drums, from Houston, Texas. Watch your mouth. That's Houston, Texas. I'm a Fort Worth man myself. But from the same performing arts high school, where people like Robert Glasper and part of that Moran clan first came to prominence, that's the kind of sense memory he grows up around. His oracle continues this morning on WBGO. Please say good morning to drummer Kendrick Scott. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, how does somebody get burning like that? Now, I recognize that tune. That's from that record, isn't it?
That's Tillman Tones. That's, a tune I wrote for Tony Williams way back in 1993. Yeah.
Tony, one of the fine musicians, drummers, in fact, that you had a chance to work with, Roy Haynes, Charlie Persett.
Yeah.
Being a couple of others.
Somebody told me at the club last night, the person just met me. He said, you know, you play the piano like drums. And that drummer, he plays the drums like it's a piano. I said, well, the first is definitely true. I wanted to be a drummer growing up. My parents wouldn't let me. So I try and take it out on the piano, I guess. But I also, you know, have such a great affinity for rhythm. And I've gotten to play with some of the most amazing rhythm makers in the world. So, yeah.
Well, you know, when the original was made in late 93, came out in 94, that's one of the attributes that you focused on when talking about Christian McBride, coming out of the funk where the beat
is
the street.
That's true.
Right?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I'm a professor now, so I have language that I didn't have then. But, you know, the fact is that all of our vernacular music, you know, comes from the same root. And when you understand and you know, connect to that root, then all that music comes alive. And so somebody like Christian or Brian, all these musicians have really sort of digested that. And they speak from the vernacular, you know, with authenticity. So
now see, and also you have to look, whether you're a musician or not. I remember, you know, in the 60s, everybody wanted to move to California and find themselves. Well, you can find yourself by closing your damn eyes. That's where it all starts for you. And for you, when you left New York, for a minute, maybe some agita set in because it's a Portland. Well, that's not New York City. But now, wait a minute. You find your balance.
Yeah.
And then you find your way. And then the next thing you know, you find the Leroy Vinegar Jazz Institute at Portland State University, where you've been for the past 22-plus years, following none other than Andrew Hill into that establishment.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, isn't it? When you think about, I mean, I was just amazed, first of all, honored to be able to, you know, to be, but I just didn't know Andrew was there. And then when I found out, I was like, wow. And yes, he's leaving, by the way. And so yeah, there is a legacy. There's a history of jazz in Portland. I mean, it's a jazz town. It's been known as a jazz town, and very strong. And so that really continues. So I feel very at home there.
Wasn't it? Didn't Lucky Thompson spend some time there?
He did. And a bunch of cats would come up from the Central Avenue scene in L.A. and just kind of cool out in Portland. And yeah, he was one of them. And Leroy Vinegar, I mean, he moved up from LA as well, and he sort of became the bastion of the scene. So when I moved there, it was like, okay, Leroy Vinegar's in Portland. It's got to be cool, you know.
So it's been, I mean, you've been back and forth. You've been back and forth between there and here over the years. But have you noticed from when you were living here that the vibe and the pace has changed somewhat, maybe?
You mean like since 1995?
Yeah.
I'd say everything's changed. Every neighborhood that I've ever lived in has changed. Everything is really different. But what actually isn't different is the energy of the young musicians. I mean, that's, you know, to me, New York still has, is sort of in its buildings, in its ground. You know, I mean, think about all those sounds. Think about the millions and millions of hours of music. You know, we were rehearsing the other day at Machico Studio, and walk out and there's Jimmy Cobb. And I was telling the guys, like, you know, when you, all the music that you ever played, like, lives inside you. So just think about the music that's living in him. Think about the random memories that would pop up in his head, you know, just walking down the street. And I feel like New York embodies all that. And so when young musicians come here, you know, they really get to tap into something amazing. And it's still happening.
And for you, of course, that sense memory would include, as you mentioned, Tony Williams, Roy Haynes, so many others, on the road touring the world with people like Betty Carter. That all informs who Darryl Grant is, regardless of the fact that it may have happened almost three decades ago.
Well, you know, and then when you get in the bandstand with these guys, it's like it all snaps back into place. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's what was happening. and it feels so good. I mean, literally, I was high for like the whole hour after the first set. I just couldn't believe it. It felt so, so great to be back playing with these gentlemen.
And the first set that Darryl refers to is at Birdland Theater in New York City. They're on West 44th Street. They opened last night. They're going to be there again tonight. And they're here with us this morning. Some more from the Sense Memory, Pushing Forward with Darryl Grant and Blackheart. What are we going to hear?
Cool. This next tune is, this is new. This is sort of an amalgamation of all those feelings and energy from that time, revisited to 2019. So this is called The New Black.
live on WBGO, and ain't that the way we're all supposed to live it? Sure it is. That's the New Black, Daryl Grant, Marquise Hill, Kendrick Scott, and Clark Summers live on Morning Jazz today. It's one of the ways that we thank you for supporting what we think is the world's greatest jazz radio station. Daryl's come east to do at least that and much more again tonight on stage at the Birdland Theater in New York City.
Ooh, it's early to be playing that hard.
Not too early to listen to it, though. That's nice, man. That's real nice. You see, you haven't lost that sense memory for the energy on the East.
Yeah, it kind of comes when you get off the plane. For me, I mean, it's like I get off and I was like, and it just sort of surges into you a little bit. And in the beginning, it's, you know, it's a little feel like trepidatious. It's like, oh, am I going to be able to keep up this time? You know.
See now, but when you're flying along like that, 90 miles an hour, and I'm hearing just the concentric circles of everybody contributing, but yet the synergy of one moving it forward. Hmm. And I wonder, is there ever a moment within that music, or maybe another piece you could play for us here this morning, where I would be able to detect, say, some of your classical background, a little Schubert, Scriabin, some of that makes its way into your playing? I mean, you can't escape it, right?
Well, sure. I mean, I think that music too comes from a history, right? And if you start to, anytime you start to really understand music, you start to understand the human emotions that go behind it, you know, and love and anger and, you know, like longing. I mean, all of those things are all inherent in the music, and our job is to tap into those emotions no matter what music we're playing. So, I mean, I'm grateful every day for the technique that I learned playing classical piano that has sort of kept me healthy and, you know, being able to continue to execute over the course of, you know, 30-some years. But there's also, sure, there's kind of lyricism and melody and all kinds of things that come out in various places in the music. But I definitely think it comes through.
Well, and all of those things that you described, even the things at first glance that might be negative, are all attractive when one is a musician because it informs what you do. And for you, it's another one of your incarnations with the Modern Jazz New Quartet.
Oh, the MJ New Quartet. Yeah. That's an interesting project that I also started at the Portland Jazz Festival. They had asked me to do a tribute to the Modern Jazz Quartet maybe 5-6 years ago. And I was like, I didn't really listen to that music that much growing up. It was a little too sedate for me. But when I started really digging into it, it's like, oh, no. There, I mean, it's very contained, but it's swinging ridiculously hard. And that sort of commonality of blending classical music and chamber music and jazz is here. And for the past several years, I've been involved with the Chamber Music America organization and on the board and sort of working with them. And so I've come to really appreciate even more so the way those two musics are connected, chamber music and jazz, and especially the way the MJQ did it. So yeah, that's another sort of flavor that I try and bring into things from time to time.
And all part of the rich history that brings us up to this morning and the New Black, right?
True, true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Marquise. Marquise, there's a microphone over there. I want to ask you a couple of questions. You are a recipient of the Thelonious Monk competition. I think 2013 or 14, you came away with the top honor. Which was
2014.
Which is really great. And growing up in Chicago, Southside, right?
Southside, yes, sir.
How was that for you growing up? How does that inform your music?
Yeah, for me, you know, I fell in love with music, jazz specifically, at a really, really young age. I was exposed to jazz at fourth, fifth grade. And on the South Side of Chicago during that time, you can imagine. So for me, I look at this music and the way I was exposed to it as a beautiful distraction, you know. I also was fortunate enough to have mentors like Willie Pickens, the great Willie Pickens, Von Freeman, Fred Anderson.
Are you too young to remember E. Parker McDougal?
Yeah.
Tenor man out of Chicago, man.
Before my time.
Yeah, ooh, he was bad, man.
I've got to do my research, though.
He was bad.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have a lot of mentors. I went to the Velvet Lounge, the Apartment Lounge, and these mentors really took me under their wings and helped me shape my sound. So I owe Chicago a lot, you know, when it comes to my sound and my influence in the music.
Wow. You were hanging out in the right neighborhoods, man,
because yes,
I can tell by listening this morning. It's evident on a couple of things, The Way We Play, which was out on Concord Records. And I have a little EP here that I pulled from this morning called Modern Flows.
Yeah, that's Volume 1, Modern Flows Volume 1.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Black Harvest is what we touched upon here this morning. Well, Daryl made the right choice, man. I thought, 25 years, Wallace Roney, woo, how are we going to do this? Well, he's doing it.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And that's nice. And again, on stage tonight at the Birdland Theater, they're on West 44th Street. That's kind of their relatively new room there.
It's beautiful. I'm telling you, I walked in there, I really feel like, am I awake? Because this is like a dream of a jazz club. It's so intimate and yet spacious, and the sound is superb. I mean, I really feel like, can this really be happening? And it's a really beautiful, beautiful room. They've done a fantastic job. So, yeah, it feels great.
Now you have, again, tonight, and then you're going to do a discussion later on this week?
Well, I'm involved in the Chamber Music America conference. They have their national conference that happens every January, and so this is an organization that's been around for 44, 45 years. I think this is the 45th conference. And about 1998, I believe, they sort of brought jazz into the fold. So it was contentious at the time, but it is really, it's one of the things that's really kickstarted my career. In 2012, I got a Jazz New Works grant to compose and perform this original composition called The Territory, which is, I think, the last thing I was out here doing. I played it at the Jazz Standard. And so they have really nurtured a number of, scores of jazz composers. Among them, our drummer, Kendrick Scott, who is a 2017 grantee and just finished his commission piece, performing his commission piece, and is recording it, and I think going to release it. And so that's, I feel like that's an organization that I really owe a lot to. And so I'm vice president, and Billy Childs is the president. So it's kind of interesting that these two jazz pianists are, the head of this national chamber music organization. But that speaks a lot to the kind of organization that it is and how incredibly committed they are to, equity and diversity, and really making sure that this music, at least the chamber music form, acknowledges all the incredible contributions of small ensemble music around the world. So.
And all descriptives that fans of this music are attracted by each and every day, especially in this day and age.
It's true.
Turn the TV off and open your ears.
Yeah.
Because all of those adjectives that you just described are alive and well in the world of jazz, aren't they?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So, what are you going to play for us next, man?
Well, this is another tune off the Black Art record. This is a ballad that I wrote that's called Foresight. And I was saying at the club last night that I never really understood why I called it that until yesterday. And I realized that so much of what's in this piece was really a foreshadowing of what I was going to, of the emotional territory I was going to deal with in the ensuing decades. So it really was kind of a piece of foresight. So.
And those of you that know the original, I believe Wallace played the muted trumpet.
He did.
Yeah. Thank you. Now, that's a reason to be stuck at the tunnel, isn't it? Daryl Grant, live on WBGO's Morning Jazz today. Marquis Hill on the trumpet, Kendrick Scott on the drums, Clark Summers on bass. And this music, this morning, going to be heard live tonight, but just like jazz, it ain't going to be done the same way, right? It'll be different.
That's true.
And tonight at Birdland Theater, the second of a two-night stand, celebrating the 25th anniversary of Black Art, a recording early in Daryl's career. I don't technically your first, no.
My first under my own name.
Yeah.
My first album debut as a leader under my own name, yeah.
Yeah. Were you scared?
You know, it was kind of like this. Kind of like now, you know, I didn't know how it was going to go, but the minute we sat down to play, you just knew it was going to be all right. And that's kind of what it felt like. It was just like, how can you go wrong with, you know, these, you know, musicians around you and just to be in it, you know, it's such, as I'm sure you know, Gary, it's such a privilege to actually be in the middle of these things that people, you know, will be writing about and listening to for, you know, as long as there are recordings. And so I felt like, you know, you feel like, okay, something special is happening, and I don't know if I deserve this, but I'm going to try and live up to the opportunity I've been presented. So.
Well, you know, 25 years ago, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the opportunity that will give you the drive to survive and press on.
Sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah. And it's, I mean, all that incredible, you know, energy. And I think of that period, that sort of mid-80s to mid-90s period as a golden age of jazz. I mean, the amount of playing and recording that was coming out of all those incredible musicians here in New York and other places as well. But for me, you know, I literally felt like I dropped into the absolute center of the universe when I moved here in 1986. I was just like, this is it. This is where I want to stay, you know. So it really felt like that, and I know that, you know, when I revisit this music and feel the energy of it, and also feel the energy that these musicians bring to it. And I will say it's an interesting thing to be the elder statesman on the bandstand when I was the one on the bandstand with the great Tony Williams or the great Betty Carter or the great Roy Haynes and looking up to them. And now I'm like, I'm the only one in the band with gray hair. but the thing about this music is that age doesn't matter. Once you start playing, it absolutely matters not at all how old you are or where you came from or literally what race you are in any of that stuff, as long as you are together inside the music and you know, everyone brings their whole entire selves and all that they've committed to this music, then, you know, age is just a number. So
music keeps you young. I mean, I think of Kendrick Scott on the drums. I think you just celebrated your 85th birthday, didn't you? Would you hand Kendrick the mic for a minute? No, I'm lying to you. You know I'm lying to you. But Kendrick, growing up at an early age in the musical ministry of a church in Houston, Texas, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My mom and my brother play piano and organ, and my father was in the sound ministry at church. So I just grew up in the church at all times. That was the first time I fell in love with the drums.
And does that give you the wide variety that you possess to play with Charles Lloyd, to play with Liz Wright and Diane Reeves, to play with Terrence Blanchard, to play with John Scofield? I mean,
the first thing that I learned was that you play music for a purpose. And that takes me, you know, takes you all the way back to Africa and why we were creating sounds with drums, you know. So when I played music for a purpose at a young age, I realized that still is something that I follow to this day with whoever I play with, you know. And I think if you live with a purpose, it's even better, you know. So I try to apply that to whoever I'm playing with, you know. How can we embody a certain spirit when we're playing? And like playing with Daryl, trying to capture that same spirit in which I was listening to this record when it came out. And me and Walter Smith and Robert Glasper, we were all in high school listening to Black Art and the new bop and, you know, really trying to capture that spirit. So it's incredible to be here with Daryl.
Yeah, I'll bet. And Glasper and Aaron Parks, a couple of the cats that were on your very first record. I mean, before they ever started making records. I mean, they were making music with you. You make a great point, though, Kendrick, when you talk about all of the adjectives that bring people for this music now are actually not that new. They go all the way back to Mother Africa.
Oh, yes.
And the whole intent there in the music or in the rhythms was community.
Oh, yes. Definitely community. Definitely community and communication, which to me is like the most beautiful thing about jazz is this. We get to communicate in the way we feel fit in the moment. And the way we accept each other and encourage each other is so beautiful in our music. So when a subject comes up, we discuss that and somebody else brings up another subject, but all within this beautiful, these beautiful songs like Daryl wrote, which are, you know, timeless songs that we can revisit and keep revisiting and have different conversations over even 25 years later. We could still talk over them.
Yeah, and even in the
moment.
And have
great conversations in the moment, yeah.
Yeah. So Daryl, you're right. At the front of the last tune, jazz has always had foresight, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Thanks. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes jazz has hindsight, you know, where you say, damn, I ain't never going out on the road. Boy, that was rough. But most of the time, it's a good ride, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it certainly has been for me, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Now, your territory, we've talked a little bit about all the wide-ranging number of individuals that you've had the chance to play with, but I want to take that word in its own, territory, and talk about the suite that you wrote that at first glance seems like a topographical kind of thing, but when you dig, you find out that it's so much more as it pertains to the Northwest in Portland.
Yeah, well, as I said, I got this grant from Chamber Music America in 2012 to write a piece, and I've been fascinated for a long time with the implications of place, like what are the vibrations that a place carries with it, and how does that inform the way people live? How does that inform the art that gets made? And so for me, having been in Oregon at that time for, you know, almost 16, 17 years, I thought it would be really interesting to see if I could tap into, you know, what is this, what is place? What does that have to do with Portland and Oregon? And so I wrote this suite that was based in part on the geography, but also on the cultural history. Because, you know, when people think of Portland, at least at that time, they thought of the TV show Portlandia and they thought of, you know, great coffee and food carts and hipsters. But, you know, when I moved there, people didn't realize that Portland had this incredible jazz history. And this vibrant African American community, and so what is the history? What is the relationship of the place to those communities, to communities of color, to Latinos and to African Americans and to Chinese and Japanese? And when I started digging into it, I was like, well, it's not so pretty. Actually, it's not all this beautiful, you know, sort of liberal wonderfulness. And so to be able to bring those stories to the fore and try and capture that feeling, that was part of what the territory was about. So there were pieces that referred to the Native American history, pieces that referred to one of the first black hotels west of the Mississippi, the Golden West Hotel, was in Portland. And so I had a connection to that hotel because the wonderful DJ and jazz journalist, Dick Bogle, his great grandfather ran the barbershop in the basement of the Golden West Hotel, you know, and just like that's where everybody went on Sundays. That was the black hotel. They'd go to dinner there. They had a cafe, ice cream shop. And so that was the heart of the African American community. So being able to tell those stories is really, really important.
Well, and it gives that community depth because I got news for you. If you look into Portland, you're going to find long before there were Starbucks, long before there were salmon markets, long before people were wearing bike shorts, you know, all the great territory bands came through Portland.
That's true.
So there was good times happening too.
Yeah, there was. I mean, there was a, as all communities are, there were, it was a mixing point, you know, and that's where it really is interesting. Where it's interesting is where the cultures rub up against each other. And so that was, you know, an interesting thing to explore. And that also shapes the place.
A lot of similarities between Portland and Newark, because Newark, just by nature of geography, so much more than just geography, because the great makers of music on their way into New York City, on their way out of New York City, they always played right down the street here at Symphony Hall. I mean, name the biggest names in entertainment. They played down the street at Symphony Hall. Sarah Vaughan, born in Newark, snuck out of the house and came to this very block and talked her way into a bar so she could sing a couple of tunes, and then called her cousin from a payphone with a dime. And her cousin came and picked her up and took her back home so she could finish her homework and go back to high school the next day. So when you look into any community, you find just a sparkle, don't you?
It's true. And we have to remember those stories, right? Because that's what makes this place special and unique, you know, and that should inform the way in which we continue to, you know, to live in a place, to appreciate those incredible stories that make a place unique.
Black art, it lives on.
Mm.
It breathes in and out.
Yeah.
25 years later, 25 years after, you're gone, man. It's still going to be breathing.
I hope so.
Daryl Grant on piano, Marquise Hill on trumpet, on bass, Clark Summers on drums, Kendrick Scott, and tonight again on stage at Birdland Theater in New York City. Will you take us out with something this morning?
Well, I will. I figure since we're moving forward, we'll move forward with the tune that came after the Black Art record. This is the title track from the record that may have been the one place where I met you. It's called The New Bop.